since many of you, or maybe most of you, are here to honor Brother Arnell, let me just say a few words in his honor myself. Today is the Babang Luksat, first death anniversary. He, last year at this time, he had a stroke, age 58, and then slipped into a coma. He never recovered from the coma, and he died on this date, August 26. So it was quite a shock, a big blow to the family, to Joyce and to the family, but also to the community, to the parish. I mean, it was just a stunning thing. He was a very regular servant of the church. In fact, to be honest with you, I didn't know his name. I just knew his face because he was always serving as an extraordinary minister of Holy Communion, EMHC, at morning masses on Sunday in the parish. And so we often served together, and when some of the other EMHC or the lay ministers, they're the ones who told me that he had died. They told me Arnell died, and I just didn't know who that was because I don't know the names of all the lay ministers. But anyway, they showed me a picture on the phone. Was that you, Danny? Showed me a picture of him on the phone, then of course I knew who it was. And there's a beautiful picture of him here right before the altar. So I had an opportunity last year to say a mass at the wake. I think that was in Philam. Yeah. And I remember very well the grief of that time, because he was only 58 and he was healthy. It was too much of a surprise and a shock and a loss. The beauty of the tradition to honor someone after a year is that it doesn't mean you still don't experience a loss, especially the widow. But it's a threshold that says 1 year has passed and it's possible to continue to go forward in life, even suffering losses. It doesn't take away the sadness, but it puts it into a context so that sadness isn't the only thing in our life, or loss isn't the only thing in life. That's why I think it's a good tradition in some cultures that is formally the end of the mourning period. And maybe here in the Philippines too, it's something like a formal conclusion of the period of mourning, but it doesn't mean that you don't mourn anymore, especially those closest to Brother Arnell. We'll always feel a sense of loss, a sense of sadness. But as I say, other things become enrich our life, and it's not all bad. We're not alone. And just looking around the chapel here and seeing it full of people, we realize we're not alone. Not only are we with God, but we are with others who are on the journey, and that's a big consolation. I hope that consolation is also done to Joyce and to the family, that in the midst of sadness, there's also support. And there's even reasons for hope. Children, grandchildren, do you have any grandchildren? Okay, not yet. But the generations continue even when our loved ones pass away. So I'm very happy to be able to offer this Mass for Brother Arnell. I just arrived myself from the States, so I have a little bit of a foggy mind, but still I'm very happy to have this opportunity. Let's turn for a moment now to the scriptures of today. We have in the Gospel, Jesus speaking about the importance of the Pharisees because they are successors of Moses, but also the problem of the Pharisees because they are so full of themselves and taking honor to themselves. And then in the first reading, we have the conclusion, we could say, of the readings from the book of Ruth. Ruth is a beautiful example of faith and devotion and service. She's a humble woman. So we can see that the liturgy sets up a contrast between Ruth and the Pharisees. Ruth and the Pharisees. Ruth being the beautiful, faithful person, Pharisees being the self-centered, prideful people, even though they're officially servants of God. Now that's the way it looks to us. After all, Ruth has a book of the Bible named after her. How much greater honor can you get? She's obviously a hero of our faith. And the Pharisees are often criticized by Jesus for their hypocrisy. So that's how we see it. But remember, in Jesus' time, And in a sense, in all times, it doesn't always look that way. It looks like Ruth, for the most part and for most of her life, she looks like the loser, the poor widow. And the Pharisees look like the holy ones and the powerful ones and the honored ones and the special ones. And they're the ones who get places of honor and titles and fancy clothing. And so obviously they're the blessed ones. And I say that's the way it looks to us in every age, because that's our natural tendency to think it's so much better to get the front seats and to get the titles and have the money and have the best clothes and be treated with respect. And we think, well, that must be the best way to live. The scriptures tell us, no, that natural tendency to want human affirmation or to be praised for earthly greatness is a problem. It gets in the way of the will of God for us, and it gets in the way of our own holiness. That's why Jesus, at the end of this gospel, repeats the line, whoever exalts himself will be humbled, but whoever humbles himself will be exalted. So our tendency to exalt ourselves is the problem, but the possibility of humbling ourselves is the solution. That's why we look at Ruth, a woman who humbled herself. Ruth might remind you of the woman that we read about last Sunday, the Canaanite woman. She was a foreigner, not a Jew. She was a woman who approached Jesus with great faith for the healing or the exorcism of her daughter. And at first, Jesus didn't pay any attention to her, remember? So at the beginning of that gospel last Sunday, she looked like the loser, the outsider, the least important. But by the end of that gospel, Jesus praises her for her great faith. And she comes out looking like a great example for all of us. And that's something like what happened with Ruth here. Ruth, if you know the story, Ruth starts out as a foreigner. Naomi, her mother-in-law, and Naomi and her two sons go to Moab because there's a famine in Israel. And the sons marry foreign women, Ruth being one of them. So Ruth married one of Naomi's sons. Well, then Naomi's husband died, and Naomi's sons both died, and all that was left was these three widows. The other daughter-in-law of Naomi went back to her people, and Naomi expected Ruth to do the same. Go back to your people. After all, there's no one poorer in that time than a widow, especially a widow with no children. So the poorest of the poor. Naomi is a widow with no more children. Ruth is a widow with no children. And there's just no way to survive unless you go back to your family and get some support. And this is where Ruth's greatness comes out. This was in yesterday's reading. Ruth says, no, don't tell me to go away. Wherever you go, I will go. Wherever you lodge, I will lodge. Your people will be my people. Your God will be my God. It's an extraordinary thing to say. She was abandoning everything that she had, her whole identity, her family, her place, even her religion, everything, abandoned in order to accompany Naomi back to Bethlehem. And that's what she does. That's what we heard yesterday. In today's reading, there they are in Bethlehem. They're still poor widows. And now Ruth is the foreigner, not Naomi. And Naomi's back with her relatives, but Ruth is a foreigner. And she's a widow. She has no one to turn to. What happens in this story, now we only get a few excerpts here. What happens is that Naomi has a relative named Boaz, and Ruth gleans in his field. That's what the poorest of the poor did. They went through the fields after the harvest time and picked up the leftovers. The whatever fell down wasn't worth gathering. That's what the widows could take, the foreigners could take. So Ruth, very humbly, takes on this role of gleaning in the field, doing the work of the hard work of the poor, harvesting what was rejected by harvesters. Boaz notices this foreigner. We only read excerpts of the story here, but to make the long story short, Boaz marries Ruth. He sees the quality of the woman. He sees her devotion to her mother-in-law. He sees her willingness to sacrifice, to serve, and also to worship the true God, the God of Israel. And he sees the qualities of Ruth and says, I'm going to take this woman as my wife. Ruth gives birth to a son. His name is Obed. Maybe we don't think much about Obed, but if you look in the genealogy of Jesus, Obed is the father of Jesse, and Jesse is the father of David, which means Ruth is the great-grandmother of King David. So you see what the story tells us is that the one who humbles herself will be exalted. The one who dedicates herself to God, even though she starts out low, she becomes an essential element in the unfolding of God's plan. Now, Ruth didn't know anything about King David. It's a few generations later, but Ruth's selfless service is held up for us as an example. And it says here that Naomi, that's the grandmother of Obed, she took the child. Where does it say it? She took the child, placed him on her lap, and became his nurse. She became the yaya. That's the way a lot of Lolas are. So here's a Lola taking care of her uppo, and she's very happy because she doesn't have any children. This is her first uppo, and it's a sign of God's care for her as a widow as well. That's why they say this. They say to Naomi, this woman, Ruth, is worth more to you than seven sons. It's a very high praise. But it shows the favor of God unfolding on behalf of the poor, unfolding on behalf of those who are willing to trust in him. Something like that Canaanite woman on Sunday. Well, here we are. We're not perhaps as poor as Ruth was. But on the other hand, all of us are poor. We have no absolute security in anything. That's right. Jesus says, don't make a big deal out of being called rabbi or father or teacher or master, because no human affirmation is going to last. No human being will last in this life, and no earthly securities last. The one that we have is the Lord, the master that we have, the father that we have, the teacher that we have is the Lord. So he's the one, if we're wise, we put our trust in him. In moments of loss and sadness, we put our trust in him. In moments of prosperity and joy, we put our trust in him. Because nothing else lasts, and nothing else is really secure. If we have faith, like Ruth had, then we have God. And if we have God, we have everything we need. If we don't have God, we don't have anything. We don't have anything, and everything becomes impossible to us. So on this first death anniversary of Brother Arnell, I think it's a good message to all of us to put our trust in God, not to be afraid of service, not to be afraid of faith, but to put our trust in God and let him take care of us and exalt us. As much as we humble ourselves, he's the one who will exalt us.